Amarva Kanjabihari Gopi Janabalaba Girivaradari Gopi Janabalaba Girivaradari Jasodanandana Brajajanarandana Jasodanandana Brajajanarandana Jamuna Gopi Janabalaba Girivaradari Gopi Janabalaba Girivaradari Jasodanandana Brajajanarandana Jasodanandana Brajajanarandana
Jaya Vishnu Parag Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Asatosa Dashi Shimadas Devango Sesi Bhakti Vinanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai Iskan Founder Acharya Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai Nanta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Shri Haridasa Thakur Ki Jai Prem Shri Goshi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadhara Shri Vasudeva Gaur Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinath Shaima Kunda Radha Kunda Giti Govardhana Ki Jai Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai Navadvipa Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai Gangamai Jamuna Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premanande All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prasthaya Bhutame Sri Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Deve. Gauravani Pacharani Nirvasesa Sanyavadi Paskajade Satarane Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Utah Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha. Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sujivam. Sadvaitam, Sadvadutam, Parijana, Sahita, Krishna, Chaitanya, Devam, Sri Radha, Krishna, Padam, Sahagana, Lalita, Sri, Sharkam, Vitamshcha. Vanchakalpa, Chubhishtakti, Pisnavivatam, Tichanam, Kavanegam, Vashnavivamana. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate. Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
September 10th, 2016, in Radadesh, Belgium, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 10, Prahlad, the best among exalted devotees, text 22. Kuru tvam preta krityani.
Kuru tvam preta krityani.
Pitu putasya sarvashaha.
Pitu putasya sarvashaha.
Madanga sparshanenanga.
Madanga sparshanenanga.
Lokanyasyati supraja.
Lokanyasyati supraja.
Please check. Kuru.
Kuru.
Perform.
Tvam.
You. Prakta
Krityani,
the ritualistic ceremony performed after death. Pituhu,
of your father.
Puttasya,
already purified.
Sarvashaha, in all respects. Mat Anga, my body. Sparshanena, by touching. Anga,
my dear child.
Lokan, two planets. Yes, city. He will be elevated. Suprajaha, to become a devotee citizen. Did anyone notice the two translations of the word Anga? My child, and the first one in Mat Anga was my own body. Isn't that sweet? So Lord Nisimhadeva is saying his own body by touching Hiranyakashipu had already liberated him. And then he refers to Prahlad as his own body also. So Anga means a part, means a limb. So the limbs of my body have touched Hiranyakashipu, and you are also a limb of my body, Prahlad Maharaj. So that is very sweet. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. My dear child, your father has already been purified just by the touch of my body at the time of his death. Nonetheless, the duty of a son is to perform the Shraddha ritualistic ceremony after his father's death so that his father may be promoted to a planetary system where he may become a good citizen and devotee. Purport. In this regard, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that although Hiranyakashipu was already purified, he had to take birth on a higher planetary system to become a devotee again. Prahlad Maharaj was advised to perform the ritualistic ceremony as a matter of etiquette. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, under no circumstances, wants to stop the regulative principles. Madhva Muni also instructs Madhu Kaita Vyo Bhyaktal Baha Duro Bhagavato Mrito Tamo Evo Kramad Apto Bhakchiched Yo Harim Yayo. When the demons Madhu and Kaitava were killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, their kinsmen also observed the ritualistic ceremony so that these demons could return home back to God. Kuru tvam preti krityani pitu putasya sarvasya mad anga sparshanenanga lokan yasyati suprajaha. My dear child, your father has already been purified just by the touch of my body at the time of his death. Nonetheless, the duty of a son is to perform the Shraddha ritualistic ceremony after his father's death, so that his father may be promoted to a planetary system where he may become a good citizen and devotee. So this verse and purport looks at the relationship, the difference, and the relationship between what we in the modern day call religion and spirituality. Just a little background here. So the person who's speaking is the Lord himself. And he's speaking to his devotee, Prahlad, who was only a five-year-old child, after the death of Prahlad's father. And Prahlad's father was killed directly by God because Prahlad's father had been not only torturing all of the citizens, destroying the environment and so forth, but also directly abusing Prahlad by literally torturing him and trying to kill him in many ways. But Prahlad asked the Lord, may I please have a benediction that my father, although he was an extreme child abuser, although he abused me in very extreme ways by trying to kill me with poison and putting me out in the freezing cold and throwing him off of cliffs and so forth, please excuse him, please forgive him for these sinful activities, and please liberate him.
not just to excuse him and he goes on being sinful, but to excuse him in such a way that he becomes purified of these evil tendencies. So this is the height of compassion, to want those who harm you to become fixed in a joyful way without punishment. And the Lord says, well, really, because I'm the one who killed him, because he touched me when he was dying, therefore, whatever punishment he would have received is already nullified. There's a transcendental system going on here, that if one has direct touch with the Lord, one doesn't have to go through the normal punishments and purification. He says, but you should still do the religious activities for his purification. You should still perform the religious rituals anyway, even though they're not really needed, because the ultimate purification has been there. He's attained spirituality. Still, you should follow the religious rituals, even though he's attained full spirituality. So, what is that we want to look at? What is the relationship between religion and spirituality? Now, about 100 years ago, when people were asked, are you a spiritual person, at least according to one large longitudinal study in America, they would answer in terms of what we would today call religion. They were even confused by the term, what do you mean by a spiritual person? Well, I go to church every Sunday, so I guess that makes me a spiritual person. You know, the concept of religion and spirituality were very much conjoined, at least in the Western world. But here we find this is an account, according to the Bhagavatam, from many millions of years ago. And here there is a distinction being made. So it's not just a modern idea that there's a distinction between religion and spirituality. So if we're going to define religion as the ordinary codes of behavior in the world that help us to become spiritual, and spirituality is the goal of the religion. Religion is the means, but the religion itself is not spirituality. If we talk about, you know, and ordinarily religion is defined as a certain set of beliefs and a certain set of rituals, a certain set of practices, but they're meant to invoke a certain consciousness. And the rituals and the beliefs in and of themselves are not that particular consciousness. And those beliefs and those rituals are not necessarily eternal. They're changing. Just like Srila Prabhupada explains, I think I was here when we spoke on it, in the fifth canto, how in former ages that one would worship the Lord in different ways. There were different mantras, there were different processes of worship, but these things change according to time, place, and circumstance. That it's not that exactly the way we're engaging in our worship today is exactly the way that Jai Shishirajapa, that Dhruva Maharaj or Prahlad Maharaj or Ambarish Maharaj were engaged in worship. Do you understand? Yes. That these external things change. And the way that beliefs are described also change. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu propounded a Chinchabeda Beda Tattva, simultaneous inconceivable oneness and difference. But we come in the line of Madhvacharya, and he didn't preach like that. His set of beliefs had some differences in them. Little pun. And then Ramanujacharya also, his set of beliefs were a little different. There's one of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers, O.B.L. Kapoor, who's published a wonderful book, Srila Prabhupada really liked it, The Religion and Philosophy of Sri Chaitanya. And he explains with the four Vaishnava Sampradayas and Sankaracharya, and then looking at Lord Chaitanya, and how each of them explain this oneness and difference with the Lord, and each one has a slightly different explanation. So the exact creed that a person follows and the exact rituals that a person follows, which is what we normally think of as religion, is not something static or eternal. That's something adaptable for time, place, and circumstance. And we find in the world at any particular time, there's many varieties of what we call religion in order to facilitate the many individual desires and so forth of the human beings. An attempt of a particular religious group to try to impose, especially in a forceful way, their particular beliefs and practices on the world, first of all, is doomed to failure, because there's a reason why there's different systems, and second of all, it's very arrogant. In the Vedic system, interestingly enough, there's a plurality of beliefs and practices within the Vedas. So if you're following the Vedas, there's many different systems of beliefs and practices, all aimed at getting you to the ultimate goal of love of God, right? We even have in the Bhagavad Gita itself, Krishna's describing different yoga practices. He ultimately recommends bhakti yoga, but he also describes karma yoga and jnana yoga and astanga yoga or dhyan yoga. And he doesn't condemn any of those. They're all bona fide yogic paths. Even Krishna advises karmakanda for those ordinary fruitive pious activities for those who are not ready to take up a path of yoga. In fact, when Krishna says, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly, ye tamam prapadyante tam sadaiva bhajamyaham. He also talks about varnashram, chaktir vanyamayashastam guna karma vivagasa tasyakaritam abhimam vijakaritam abhimam. That those who are not ready for actual for a religion which will bring them to total spirituality, okay, you can take even something that will give you piety in the world, which is the varnashram system. We can use varnashram and bhakti, but that's what we're going to get to. So that's the difference between religion and spirituality. Well, that's the definition of religion. The definition of spirituality is our eternal constitutional nature. In Sanskrit, it's called Sanatan Dharma, our eternal Dharma. And that doesn't change according to time, place, and circumstance. That's not conditional. That is constitutional. That is who we are. And that's true for every living entity at all times and in all places. As Krishna says in the four key verses of the Bhagavatam, you should search for this in all times and in all places, by all means. And in the commentary, it explains that's because this consciousness is applicable to everyone. It's applicable on any planet, in any body, in any life form, at any time of human history, in the material creation, in the spiritual creation. It's always applicable to everyone. It's transcultural, it's trans dogma, it's trans ritual, it's trans everything. It is the ultimate stratum of reality. And that Sanatan Dharma is what? Always love God. Engage in loving service to the Lord. Jivera Swarupaya Krishnara Nityadasha. That the soul is the eternal loving servitor, is intimately connected with the Lord in loving service. The ultimate reality is reciprocation of love between the Supreme Lord and the living entities. And any bona fide system of religion is meant to either quickly or slowly, directly or indirectly, invoke that consciousness. That is the purpose. So here it's said that the Lord, under no circumstances, wants to stop the regulative principles. So Prabhupada's saying here that the Supreme Lord never wants to stop the practice of religion. It's interesting because how does Bhagavad Gita end? With what? Abandon all religion. Sarva dharma paricha jama mekam sharanam braja aham tam sarva papebhyo moksha yamasucha. Give up all this dharma. Don't be concerned with all this dharma. Just come right to the spirituality. Just surrender to me. Just get your relationship with me. Don't be attached to all this dharma. And here Prabhupada's saying, the Lord under no circumstances wants to stop this ordinary dharma. And it's interesting when Krishna says, right, when Krishna says, give up all dharma and surrender to me, what is he asking Arjuna to do in surrender? What's he asking him to do?
Fight.
Fight, which was his dharma. He's asking him to continue to do what he would have done according to his normal material life, according to what was the normal ethics and morality of his particular situation at that particular time. Keep on doing it. Don't stop doing it. And in fact, Arjuna kept asking throughout the Bhagavad Gita, if I'm going to surrender to you and I'm going to come to higher consciousness and I'm going to come to Buddha Yoga, why do I still need to do these duties in the world? I don't understand it, Krishna. He said it several times. He said, these seem contradictory to me. It seems that I should walk away from these duties in the world. And in fact, Krishna said, it's a fact, when you're already achieved the state of higher consciousness, you have no need to do ordinary religious activities in the world. But he also said, you have no reason to give them up either. You have no reason to do them, and you have no reason to give them up. But generally, he says, I want those who have achieved the purpose of religion to continue to follow religion. Why? Yet, yet, a tarati shrista. Just set an example. Otherwise, people who haven't achieved the purpose of ordinary religion will think that the ends and the means are the same. You know, in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, for the beginner, work is said to be the means, and for the advanced person in yoga, cessation of all material activities is said to be the means. So if those who have achieved higher consciousness stop externally performing the duties and ethics and norms of the world, then people will think, because they don't need to. They've achieved the goal of them. You know, Einstein didn't need to write out his mathematical formulas. Did you know that? He would just come to the answer, and he had hired people work out the formulas. Interesting, right? So, you know, once you've achieved higher consciousness, you don't need to do any of the rituals of religion. But if those on that platform don't do the rituals of religion, then people in general will think, the way I achieve higher consciousness is by giving up the rituals of religion. Do you all understand that? I gave this example the other day with learning how to read, that good readers read phrases. We don't sound out words once you're a fluent reader. Not sounding out the letters, unless it's a very difficult new word. But, you know, we're reading in chunks. But if you try to teach a 5 or 6 year old to read in chunks, they don't learn how to read, most of them. Only 2-3% will learn how to read them. So if one thinks that the behavior of an accomplished person is the way to become accomplished, that doesn't work. It doesn't work. Now, of course, a lot of the behavior done in religion is also the behavior done by a self-realized soul, especially in bhakti yoga, which is not true in every system of religion. But in bhakti yoga, the beginner chants Hare Krishna as a means, and the accomplished yogi, the self-realized person, chants Hare Krishna as an expression of their love. It's like you might give a flower to someone you love as a means to develop that love, or you might give a flower to someone you love as a means to express love that's already there. So in bhakti yoga, many of our practices do continue on eternally, even in their external forms. But certainly not everything. Certainly not everything we do that's in that category. And in many religious systems, there's going to be very little that people do that's in that category that actually continues like that. So that's the main means. And ultimately, bhakti gives people, another point here in this verse is about Hiranyakashipu himself, which is sort of interesting, that Hiranyakashipu, although he touched the Lord and got purified that way, he still had to develop his bhakti. It says here, Su Prajaha. Loka Nyasyati Su Prajaha. Loka means a planet. Yasyati, he will be brought to that place. Su Prajaha. Su means very glorious. Prajaha, a citizen, where he can become a glorious citizen. So even bhakti, it's giving us an opportunity. Ordinary religion gives us the opportunity to develop bhakti. And the religion of bhakti, so to speak, gives us also, it's giving us the opportunity to develop the consciousness of bhakti. Having touch with the Lord is not like automatic. You know, sometimes we think that way. Well, if I just could see the Lord, or if he would touch me, then everything would be there. But Lord Nrisimhadeva is saying, yes, okay, I've touched him, I've liberated him. He doesn't have to suffer punishment for all the incredibly evil things that he's done. I've given him a higher vision. But now he's going to have to develop it. The same was true for Ajamila. Right? You all know the story of Ajamila. Mm-hmm. He was very sinful, not anywhere close to Hiranyakashipu. But he was become degraded. And at death, he was visited by the Vishnu Devas. But that wasn't the end of it. Instead of dying then, he stayed in his body. And he went to Haridwar and he developed his spirituality. So in general, our process of bhakti is an opportunity to develop a higher consciousness. It's not that just, you know, like they say, it's not that anyone in a garage is a car. You know, it's not that just because you come into the building, like Prabhupada was asked, is it better to live in a temple? And Prabhupada said, that depends whether your consciousness is on another subject matter. Mm-hmm. You know, Krishna consciousness is not a matter of geography. Sometimes we think that, you know, if you sleep in the temple building, you're on a higher level than if you sleep across the street. Or we were talking about this in Manashiksha, that a resident of Vrindavan means one who's meditating on the spiritual world, not just someone who lives in a geographical area of India. Because Bhakti Sanat just said a lot of the people in Radhakund are actually in Narakakund, they're actually in hell, because they have the wrong mentality. So this process is giving us an opportunity. In general, the codes of religion, even if you want to look at very mundane religious codes, you know, don't lie, don't cheat, don't steal, don't commit adultery. That's meant to give a person an opportunity to develop a higher consciousness. All the rules of Varnashram are meant for that purpose. But even the practices of bhakti itself, and the practices of bhakti itself, are many of which are identical to the activities of one in higher consciousness, they're meant to give us an opportunity. So we have sort of two things that we're looking at here. One is that if you've achieved higher consciousness, you should still keep the order in the world. Because that's given by Krishna, Dharmam tu Sakshat Bhagavad Pranitam. Krishna has designed the religious principles of the world. So if you've achieved the goal of them, you shouldn't disturb their practice for people in general. Now, occasionally we do have devotees who live as avadutas. Yes? Sometimes it happens. Who live in a way that the world sees as crazy. That live outside of the regulative principles of the world. There was that Vamshi Das Babaji in Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati's time. Right? And one of the people who traveled with him said, in the 4 months that I've traveled with him, he's never bathed, nor slept, nor eaten, nor drank, nor passed stool and urine. So he wasn't following any of the rules of the world. But, you know, you can't imitate that. You try to imitate that. Try to go for 4 months without drinking water. It's not going to work. So sometimes you have these people who do even externally violate all the rules of society. But that's the exception. Generally, we're called upon to follow the rules of society. Otherwise, we create havoc. If we think, well, now I'm transcendental. And the other thing is not to think that because I've achieved full of Krishna consciousness, I can violate the rules of the world. And the other is not to think that just because we have in our Krishna consciousness movement a very high system of behavior and philosophy, that automatically is giving us a higher consciousness. That we have to utilize that situation to develop a higher consciousness. Not to do things ritualistically, not to do things religiously. Do you all follow what I'm saying? Not to take Krishna consciousness as my religion. It's just, you know, what I do. Like I observe my national holidays, I observe my Hare Krishna holidays, and this is just what we do. But that every single thing that we do has the potency. I mean, taking a drop of charanamrita, circumambulating the temple, following the Ratha Yatra cart, each one of these things has the potency to instantly and fully awaken our higher consciousness, our real consciousness, if we approach it properly. So those two things are there. So I wanted to end early today because I'm leaving this morning. So we have time for until we go to 8:30 if anybody has any questions or comments. Yes.
Yes, it's about the last idea. What is the proper function when we are in a festival or during the proper consciousness can be with other devotees also, or with Krishna, who is it?
Well, the proper consciousness is always Jivera Swarupaya Krishna Nityadasha. I am not this body, I am not this mind, I am a soul who's a servant of Krishna. And my business is to develop a loving relationship with him. That is always the proper consciousness. And then everything else flows from that. As Rupa Goswami explains, if one always thinks of Krishna, all the other regulative principles flow naturally from that. If you try to start with the regulative principles, okay, what do I do in this situation? What do I do in this situation? Sometimes it's clear and sometimes it's not. Right? Sometimes it's not. You know, what will I do? But if you start from I want to have a loving relationship with Krishna. I am his soul. Then everything becomes clear. If you say, well, even then sometimes it's not clear. Well, in that case, whatever choice you make is okay. Just like Mother Yasoda, she's breastfeeding baby Krishna and the milk is boiling over. And Prabhupada notes that her breast milk is for Krishna and the milk on the stove is for Krishna. And she decides to put down baby Krishna and take care of the milk first. But had she decided to let the milk boil over, that would have been okay too. You know, that was, she has her personal agency as an individual. That she decides this is the priority. Of course, Prabhupada says there, Krishna will give you intelligence in that purport, what to do first. So sometimes, you know, if you're in a situation where there's 100 different ways to develop your love with Krishna, then probably any of them are okay. But otherwise, if it's a choice between, you know, what will help me develop my love with Krishna and what will simply feed my ego, go with what will develop your love for Krishna. And that's our basic choice, really, at every moment. That's basically what we're choosing between at every moment. What will feed my ego and what will spread love of God. And the externals may sometimes look exactly the same. But the internal consciousness will be quite different, and how other living beings experience your behavior will be quite different. So whether it's at a festival or not at a festival, that's not the point. What can I do at this moment that will help me develop my love with the Supreme Lord, which is my natural constitutional position? How can I, in this particular situation, at this point, in this time, with these people, you know, like they say, what's the most important time now? Who are the most important people, the people you're with? What's the most important thing you're doing, whatever you're doing right now? Prabhupada wrote something like this in a letter to Jayapitakaswami, that whatever is meant to be, that I am doing, and one should do that with full attention to every detail, that Krishna's pleasure is my only motive. He said that's the definition of surrender to Krishna. So wherever we are, moment by moment by moment by moment, this is the most important thing that I'm doing. Whatever I'm doing at this moment with these people is the most important thing. And to do it, bless you, with great attention to the detail to please Krishna. So how to do that requires expert guidance of a spiritual master. Because otherwise one will just make up in one's own mind what's pleasing to Krishna and what's not. And one will say what's pleasing to Krishna as what's pleasing for one's senses. And according to the modes of nature that you're in, you'll see Krishna very differently. I was just reading the 11th canto this morning. You know, those who worship me with a desire to harm others are in the mode of ignorance. Those who worship me to get things in the world are in the mode of passion. You know, so we might be worshiping the Lord, you know, like, please God, help me kill my enemies. I'm Protestant, Lord, help me kill the Catholics. I mean, you know, so people will have some different concocted ideas about what does it mean to spread love of God. Therefore, we need to have guidance of a guru, we probably said, especially in the beginning, very expert guidance of a spiritual master is required. I was just talking with one devotee about this yesterday. You know, he was asking me about very elevated topics, and I said, but you don't have a guru. How, you know, if you really want to get into very elevated topics, you have to accept a spiritual master, you have to accept a guide. I was also thinking, recently I had two very surprising situations with devotees in the last few months, with two different devotees. And each of them are very respected scholars in our movement. One is actually quite well-known, a respected scholar and leader. And each of them did something that was quite surprising How would I put this delicately? They did things that you really wouldn't expect a devotee to do. In fact, you wouldn't really expect even an ordinary civilized person to do. It was quite surprising. In each case, I was thinking, you know, these are things you should be taught when you're 5 or 6 years old by your mother, that you don't do them. And in thinking about these things, I was realizing that we're very blessed if we have somebody in our life, because we all do foolish things that we should have learned when we were 5 years old not to do, right? There was one list they circulate, you know, all the most important things in life I learned when I was in kindergarten. So we all do things that our five-year-old self knows is wrong. And it's very important if we have someone in our life, and I was thinking many times in ISKCON, our Diksha Gurus don't have that kind of relationship with their disciples because they hardly see them and they hardly feel comfortable to instruct them and so forth, who can say to us, hey, this is ego. You understand? You know, because we might think, oh yes, I'm just trying to please Krishna, and actually it's just ego. So we really need at least someone in our life who can say, hey, that's ego. Wow, that's pleasing to Krishna. That's ego. That's pleasing to Krishna. And as we mature in Krishna consciousness, that becomes internalized. And we start to have a sense of the internal experience of ego as versus the internal experience of pleasing Krishna. And we start to be able to distinguish between them more and more ourselves. But even on a very advanced platform, the devotee is submissive to Guru. And we have so many stories, even of very advanced devotees that are corrected by their Guru. Hey, don't do that. So that's also absolutely necessary. Without that, you know, we're very prone to self-deception. Very, very, very prone to self-deception. Even if we've attained a high state of consciousness. I mean, until we're completely... But even the devotees who are completely pure, they're very submissive to Guru. Not only to set an example, but out of natural humility. They genuinely feel like that. Srila Prabhupada never felt himself independent of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Never. He gave all the credit for everything to his spiritual master. He never said, oh, now I'm a self-realized soul. You know what? I don't need my guru's guidance. Never put that. I mean, it was always exactly the opposite. And if we don't have anybody taking that role in our life, you know, if our only guru is a more or less official relationship with someone we see maybe once every few years and who just says, you know, Hari Bol, how are you doing? I'm doing fine. Oh, that's nice. Then we might consider that we need someone in our life who's going to help us. So thank you all very much for your hospitality, as always. One of the most wonderful temples. I love it that the atmosphere in this temple is very very much in line with Srila Prabhupada's vision of seeing everything from many angles of vision and discussing the Shastra threadbare. There's such an atmosphere here of real authenticity in relationship to Krishna consciousness. And then, of course, absolutely first-class deity worship and the vision that's been developed for the center. Parabhakti Guru was telling me in Villa Vrindavan, every place has its own particular identity. You know, you can't just copy-paste what one center does to another. And here, you've all really developed the identity of the place. And so many happy, wonderful devotees who are really progressing in Krishna consciousness. And things are very clean and well-maintained. So thanks to Vidya Chaitanya and Manohar Prabhu particularly. But of course, thanks to all the devotees, because everybody contributes to that, whether it's, you know, the person scrubbing the pots in the kitchen. It's not just the people who are in the managerial position, although the managers provide the whole mood of the place. So it's just always a pleasure to come here, and it's a place that I, without any hesitation, recommend people to come and visit and stay. So again, thank you, and thank you for tolerating me and welcoming me as a guest. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.